The English Eccentric by E.O. Higgins.
In 1765, a distinguished French scholar by the name of Pierre-Jean Grosley visited England for the first time and was struck by the level of eccentricity he observed in the natives. Writing home on the subject, he noted that this unusual behaviour he had observed could be attributed to a mixture of fogs, beef, and beer, aggravated by the tedium of the English Sunday. The writer Paula Garan once said, "The further we've gotten away from the magic and mystery of our past, the more we've come to need Halloween." Well, in this special All Hallows Eve episode of the English Eccentric, we're going into the darkness.
Aleister Crowley, 1875-1947. The wickedest man in the world.
A man of many parts, Aleister Crowley was at various points in his life a writer, a poet, a mystic, a mountain climber, and a black magician. It's possible that Crowley's mother may have unintentionally influenced his life's work by nicknaming him the Beast while still in infancy. Crowley's father, a religious zealot who ran a successful brewing company, made the young Crowley study the Bible for hours on end, something that turned out to be largely counterproductive. Young Crowley found the word of God to be full of inconsistencies. Crowley particularly resented the bits that said that life's most enjoyable experiences, at least as he saw them, were sinful. Crowley's hot take on biblical interpretation was,
"If one were to take the Bible seriously, one would go mad. But to take the Bible seriously, one must be already mad."
In 1895, Crowley attended Trinity College, Cambridge, where he read philosophy before switching to English literature. Whilst he was studying at Cambridge, Crowley's father died, bequeathing to him a hefty legacy. The following year, Crowley privately published his first poem, A Seldomer, to a fairly cool reception, and quickly followed this up with the more daring White Stains, a decadent collection of erotic poetry incorporating themes about sadomasochistic sex and masturbation. Yes, White Stains. Crowley left Cambridge without bothering to sit any exams, but with a growing interest in Western esotericism. In November 1899, he purchased Bullskin House on the shore of Loch Ness in Scotland, where he apparently made himself known to the local constabulary by complaining about the prostitute problem in the locality. Local detectives were dispatched to investigate, reporting to Crowley,
"We're very sorry, sir, but we were unable to find any prostitutes in the area."
To which he replied,
"Ah, well, that's the problem."
Zing. Nice one, Crowley. Whether they arrested him for wasting police time is not recorded. Crowley developed a love of Scottish culture and even described himself as the Laird of Bullskin. In the spring of 1906, one of his chums, Jules Jaco Guillemot, arrived at Bullskin House and proceeded to bore Crowley about his success as a big game hunter. Cutting him off, Crowley asked him if he had ever hunted a haggis. Jaco Guillemot, evidently one of Bertie Wooster's Drones Club contemporaries, admitted that he had not. Crowley explained that the haggis was a dangerous Highland ram, sacred in Scotland, and as such, rarely hunted. Some days later, whilst the two men were smoking cigars and queuing up in the billiard room at Bullskin House, Crowley's butler suddenly burst into the room and in an excited voice explained that there was a haggis on the hill. they immediately rushed to Crowley's gunroom to arm themselves. The three men tracked their quarry for an hour and a half, with Jacques Guillemont being, by all accounts, intensely eager to bag the elusive haggis. Crowley's butler was evidently less so, apparently drawing the line when the two hunters waded through an icy pond because, according to Crowley, it would throw the haggis off their scent. During this period, Crowley had taken to wearing traditional Highland dress. Even during his frequent trips to London, where he had recently been initiated into the UK's top occult society, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, a secret society devoted to the study and practice of the occult, metaphysics, and paranormal activities, which maintained the world was run by secret chiefs perched high in the Himalayas. However, after just a few years, Crowley fell out with the founders of the organisation, though the reason for this rift remains open to debate. Crowley maintained that he quickly grew disillusioned with the order, as it had fundamentally misunderstood many occult rites and rituals, and that the order's founder, S.L. MacGregor Mathers, was in danger of awakening evils over which he had no control. Whereas the rest of the members of the order claimed that they had found Crowley annoying, and he was kicked out for publishing the order's secret documents and claiming to have written them himself. So it's difficult to know who to believe. After leaving the Golden Dawn, Crowley travelled to Mexico, where he quickly established his own order, the Lamp of the Invisible Light. The aims of the new society were many and varied, but included finding the Golden Fleece, sowing dragon's teeth, and killing the biblical serpent. It was whilst in Mexico that Crowley claimed to have discovered a process through which he could render himself invisible, the secret to which is simply to make other people not look at you. Having quickly perfected this power, Crowley would regularly drift about the streets of Mexico City, dressed in satin robes and an outsized golden crown, and claimed the locals would always avoid making eye contact with him, thus proving he was invisible. According to Crowley, making oneself invisible was easy because he claimed that nothing really exists on its own. However, he argued that there was a mystical practice that had the power to connect the subconscious human mind to every element of the physical world. Yoga. According to Crowley, cheese doesn't really have any qualities in and of itself because everyone perceives it in a unique way. The only way to truly connect to cheese, Crowley maintained, was training the body through yoga. If you were successful in practicing true yoga, Crowley said you would know because four things would occur. Initially, you would perspire. Then your body would experience a contraction in the muscles. The third stage was Bakari Sidi, which Crowley described bafflingly as jumping about like a frog. And the fourth stage was, of course, levitation. However, Crowley never really made it clear at what stage the cheese was supposed to be administered. In 1904, Crowley, who had recently been exposed as bisexual, entered a marriage of convenience with Rose Edith Kelly. And this, it seems, was one of the few times in Crowley's life that he didn't have sex on his mind. Instead, he spent the duration of their honeymoon taking drugs and invoking ancient Egyptian deities. According to Crowley's later accounts of these rituals, on the 18th of March, Rose became delirious and explained that she had made contact with Iwas, the spiritual frontman of the ancient god Horus, who proclaimed to Crowley that the equinox of the gods had come. In fact, he and Horus spent three full days shooting the breeze, and afterwards it transpired, can you believe it, that Crowley was the major prophet of a new religion. Crowley later claimed that he wrote down everything Horus told him, and titled it Liber Alvel Ligus, or the Book of the Law, a sacred text that served as the basis for Thelema, a new religion that fused Western ideals and Eastern mysticism, that to this day remains largely open to interpretation, but famously pivots on the fundamental tenet, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." Did Crowley mean that his followers could do whatever they wanted, or that everyone has a divine purpose? Crowley naturally obfuscated on this point. And in fairness, clarity doesn't typically have much place in religion. The following year, Crowley, a talented and experienced mountaineer, decided he would climb Kanchenjunga in the Himalayas, widely regarded at the time as the world's most treacherous mountain. Preparing for it, he put together a team of climbers, including the former haggis hunter Jaco Guillemot. However, the expedition was marred by Crowley's brutal treatment of their guides and his tedious mystical insights, and the rest of the team eventually split from him. They left on a single rope, and a fall precipitated an avalanche in which four of the group were killed. Hearing their frantic cries for help, Crowley apparently elected to remain in his tent drinking tea. The next day, Crowley passed the site of the accident without pausing and made his own way to Darjeeling. He later wrote in a local newspaper that he had advised against the descent and that he had no sympathy whatever for those who had been killed. Though many areas of Crowley's life are shrouded in mystery, he wrote assiduously and candidly on his experiments in sex magic, spelt with a K, obviously. For Crowley, the ritual of sex magic, or erotocomatose lucidity, was of significance to anyone wishing to undergo a spiritual journey. After going through some basic preparation, which included physical training and feasting, presumably to keep the strength up, the individual undertaking the sex ritual would be obliged to undergo a process whereby two experienced followers of Thelema would endeavour to exhaust them sexually by every known means. To Crowley's way of thinking, sex exhausts the body but exhilarates the spirit, and therefore it is important for the subject to be so tired post-coitus that they just want to roll over and go to sleep. Which apparently, many men participating quickly got down to a fine art. Crowley's notoriety within the UK grew when he was exposed by the British tabloid press for having sex in his Italian Abbey of Thelema with his girlfriend Leah Hersig, and a goat. In fact, by all accounts, the goat stubbornly refused to get involved, so the plan was abandoned. Still, word got out that Crowley and Hersig were endeavouring to emulate ancient pagan sex rituals, and Benito Mussolini, possibly annoyed that he didn't get an invite, threw them out of the country. They returned to the UK, where tabloid newspapers had written editorials nicknaming Crowley the wickedest man in the world and the man we'd most like to hang. Along with his friend, Anglo-Germanic tantric occultist and singer Theodore Royce, in 1912, Crowley set up a cult, Mysteria Mystica Maxima, with himself as leader, and he took on the rather lofty title of Supreme and Holy King of Ireland, Iona, and all the Britons within the Sanctuary of Gnosis. Around the same time, Crowley started becoming breathless, and it was discovered, upon visiting a doctor, that he was suffering from asthma, for which he was prescribed heroin, to which he quickly became addicted. By the late 1930s, Crowley was on nodding terms with figures within Britain's intelligence community, including Dennis Wheatley, Roald Dahl, and Ian Fleming. When the Second World War broke out, he wrote to the Naval Intelligence Division offering his services, but was declined, and, subsequently, went to work for the Nazis. However, rumours persist that he was in fact a double agent, and according to Crowley at least, he created the V for Victory symbol to be used by Churchill as a counter-signal to neutralise the swastika. Crowley's drug habit dogged him for the rest of his years, and his regular attempts to wean himself off heroin just meant he would try and offset it with other Class A drugs. By the mid-1930s, he was a rather tragic figure. He'd lost his looks, most of his teeth, and almost all his money, and was reduced to shambling about cheap hotels and bed sitting rooms. He was also regularly derided and vilified by the British press. In 1934, he tried to sue the author Nima Hamnett for libelling him in her book The Laughing Torso. But rather than boosting Crowley's coffers, as he had hoped, the judge threw the case out of court, stating that it was impossible to libel Crowley because he had no reputation to defend. Crowley died of a respiratory infection in a Hastings boarding house in December 1947, at the age of 72. According to popular myth, his last words were,
"I am perplexed,"
though this was later denied by the woman who sat beside him in his final moments, who claimed that in fact he gasped,
"Sometimes I hate myself."
Readings at Crowley's cremation service in Brighton included the hymn to Pan, and, somewhat unsurprisingly, tabloid newspapers reported it as a black mass. Crowley's ideas on sex and drugs brought about a revival of interest in America in the 1960s. Indeed, the founder of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, was an early admirer and acolyte of Crowley's. Though this respect was not reciprocated. Crowley dismissed him as an idiot. So he probably wasn't all bad then.
Next on the English Eccentric.
The Perennial Candidate.